Oh, good evening. Those fans have made a huge difference in how it is to be in here. We used to sit and just be drenched. So, let's do introductions around. Some new-ish faces and old faces returned. Let's... Great to see you. It's been a long time. That's the only way. Yep. We're right in the middle of the Diamond Sutra. We're on number page, not page, but number 13, chapter 13, paragraph 13. Which is page 203, if you're working with the book. And this is the book. This is Red Pine's book. Do you have it? Super. Does somebody want to read it? Oh, it's a long one. Actually, read one page and it's great. It's not that long, actually.
This having been said, the Venerable Ananda, Bhagavan, what is the name of this Dharma teaching and how should we remember it? The Buddha told the Venerable Subhuti, the name of this Dharma teaching, Subhuti, is the perfection of wisdom. Thus should you remember it. And how so? Subhuti, what the Tathagata says is the perfection of wisdom. The Tathagata says is no perfection. Thus it is called the perfection of wisdom. Subhuti, what do you think? Is there any such dharma spoken by the Tathagata? Subhuti said, no indeed, Bhagavan, there is no such dharma spoken by the Tathagata. The Buddha said, Subhuti, what do you think? Are all the specks of dust in the billion-world system of the universe many? Subhuti said, many, Bhagavan. The specks of dust are many, Subhuta. And how so? Because, Bhagavan, what the Tathagata says is a speck of dust, Bhagavan. But the Tathagata says is no speck. Thus is it called a speck of dust. And what the Tathagata says is a world system, the Tathagata says is no system. Thus it is called a world system. The Buddha said, Subhuti, what do you think? Can the Tathagata, the Arhan, the fully enlightened one, be seen by means of the 32 attributes of a perfect person? Subhuti said, no indeed, Bhagavan. The Tathagata, the Arhan, the fully enlightened one, cannot be seen by means of the 32 attributes of a perfect person. And why not? Because, Bhagavan, what the Tathagata says of the 32 attributes of a perfect person, Bhagavan, the Tathagata says are no attributes. Thus are they called the 32 attributes of a perfect person. The Buddha said, furthermore, Subhuti, if a man or woman renounce their self-existence every day as many times as there are grains of sand in the Ganges, and renounce their self-existence in this manner for as many kalpas as there are grains of sand in the Ganges, and someone grasped but one four-line gatha of this Dharma teaching and made it known and explained it to others, the body of merit produced as a result would be immeasurably infinitely greater. It's hard enough to read by myself, out of the book.
It was well done. Tongue twisting. Bhagavan. So this is about language again. This is about how our mind works and names things. So it starts out, the name of the Dharma teaching, please tell me, what's the name of this? Without a name, we're a little bit at sea, aren't we? We all have names. We give names to things. If we find something that doesn't have a name, it's a little bit disturbing, and we ask what it is and try to find out. It solidifies things for us. If we have a name for it, we think we know what it is. Actually, even in terms of each other, including ourselves, we really hardly know. But it gives us the illusion that we know something. and it's one of the delights of being a human. One of the pleasures is the pleasure of words, the pleasure of naming things. When God let Adam name everything, I always thought that was, what a nice present that was to let him do that. It was really sweet. So in this case, Buddha is saying, this is the perfection of wisdom. Prajna Paramita. This is Prajna Paramita. And then he says, he offers Subhuti the opportunity to reject the name. There is no such dharma spoken by the Tathagata, because the name is an illusion, and if you imagine that you know something by giving it a name, it's false. It's a mistake. And so, even though you have to give it a name in order to identify it, be able to point it out and communicate about it, you have to know also how unreal it is. And so it's denied as quickly as it's pronounced. And that's happening all the way through here, isn't it? And it starts out with the name of the sutra. And the specks of dust, the world system, and the fully enlightened ones with all their 32 attributes. All of those are collections of names and ideas and thoughts about our life. So, in every case, Subhuti answers the Buddha, no, indeed, Bhagavan. It's not really that way. And then at the end, going through all the grains of sand of the rivers and the many rivers and the grain, so vast we can't even imagine it. Even so, just one little four-line gatha from this material is, and explaining it to others is immeasurably great. So measuring things is one of the things we love to do and need to do as we live on the face of the earth. We have to measure how much and how many, and we revel in it. And yet, he's saying that even though if we could know how much and how many of everything, it wouldn't be nearly as important as knowing just a little piece of this, of knowing how things really, how our mind works, knowing what's real. Chao Ming calls this holding on to the real teaching. So Red Pine says this is where the arhans and bodhisattvas part company. The Buddha asks us simply to see things as they are and to share this vision with others. Buddhas do not arise from emptiness, but from this teaching, which liberates us from both delusions and emptiness, as well as from the renunciation of delusions and emptiness. So Subhuti had been practicing with the understanding that indeed Buddhas arise from emptiness, and that the cultivation of emptiness is what practice is. And what Buddha says is that we have to liberate ourselves from emptiness also. So paramita, as we know, because we've studied the paramitas, is what leads to the other shore. It's how we can cross over to from samsara to nirvana, on the assumption that samsara and nirvana are different and even opposites. That samsara is where our suffering and our sinfulness and our foolishness and all the things that make us what we are, and nirvana as some kind of other better place, some divine place. But it's also a way of describing our relationship with practice and our relationship, our basic relationship with our own mind and body. That when we begin to become familiar with ourself, it's messy. Soaked with mud and splashed with water, they say, or something like that. Our life is a mess, and yet, the longer we practice, the more we begin to realize that our life is where we are and what it is. There isn't anything else, anywhere else. We're not going anywhere. So that we can't just say that in a kind of flippant way, oh well, samsara is nirvana after all, and so let's just have a good time. But it gives us a kind of window into our practice, that there is a way of seeing that they're both sides of something that we can't really say. Both sides of it. We don't throw away one for the sake of the other in either case. It's our dilemma and our paradox that we have to live like this. Samsara and nirvana. Untranscendent. Untranscendable. So Red Pine says, prajna refers to the logic of emptiness. It is the usefulness of this logic that Subhuti now realizes. For emptiness means absence or negation. It's the emptiness in the cup. That's the emptiness. It's not some weird outside thing. It's the emptiness in all things. For emptiness means absence or negation, while the perfection of wisdom means the absence or negation of what is false, not the absence or negation of what is real. So when we talk about getting rid of the ego or getting rid of the self, it's a misunderstanding. We don't throw ourselves away in order to practice purely. It's just that we see more clearly and more honestly how things are. As Red Pine says, none of the things that fill our lives is by itself false. It is only our conceptualization and attachment that make them false. So that's the secret. It's not a secret at all. We know how mixed up we get when we get involved with attachment, and how more and more unreal it can become as we hold on and create a story around it to make it real, even though it's all made up. Sheng Yi says, the name is a false name. Beneath this false name is the real body. From verbal wisdom arises insight wisdom, by means of which we see that all things are empty, including wisdom. Meng San says, don't listen to others. Think about things yourself. Think about your own name. Then ask yourself, is this me? If it isn't me, who is it? Since this is who I am, I may as well say it's me. This is what is meant by practice. What else can you use to practice? Your own name, your own life, your own experience. And then there's the kayas again. Not sure I want to go into that at this point. Well, maybe I will. Red Pine says, instead, instead of offering jewels, the offering is our own self. In the last chapter, it was about offering jewels. Now we offer ourself. The defining characteristic of the perfect person is renunciation. However, renunciation itself does not lead to liberation. It's also attachment. Buddhas arise from this teaching of prajna, which is no teaching. And Buddhas are Buddhas because they are not attached to the concept of a self. Hence, they find no self to renounce. Isn't that nice? It's a whole extra step to renounce a self that isn't there in the first place. It's just an idea. So Red Pine said, not only is this teaching of prajna no teaching, and the world in which it is taught, no world, and the teacher who teaches it, no teacher, The self who makes an offering of this teaching is no self. Such understanding as this gives birth to the Bodhisattva's infinite body of merit, which is the Sambhogakaya, the selfless nobody that each Bodhisattva acquires upon practicing this teaching. It's Emily Dickinson. I'm nobody. Who are you? Are you nobody too? This contrasts with Subhuti's practice of self-renunciation, whereby he had freed himself of desires and was waiting for the fires of nirvana to consume his physical body, after which he would receive no further body. Meanwhile, the Bodhisattva's body of merit is not limited by time or space and appears wherever there are beings in need of liberation. So, creating a situation in which a four-line gatha is grasped means anything that anybody says that opens things up to this wisdom, this truth. That behind the facade of the names, behind the facade of the ideas, is a vital and vivid and brilliant life going on that we can't name. We don't need to name, but of which we can indicate and toward which we can point. And even a little bit of speech can actually open it up. So I've got these. Thank you. And there's time for a discussion a bit. Yes, then we feel comfortable.
Refer to the same as the storage.
Interesting. Yeah. What was the name of the movie?
First and Still, or The End of the World. That's a big impression.
Good homework.
Always here when I come back. It's amazing.
It's an illusion, Forrest. It's an illusion.
It's tendencies of one of us to take things for granted and to forget about that. And that it really is just such a unique thing that we can do this in our time and age, that we can sit zazen alone is amazing. And that we can get together with other people and share that is just, it's such an incredible gift to us all. So I just want to remind you all of that, because having not been here for a while, I was reminded of it just by the mere virtue of being able to come back.
Thank you. Thank you. That's a perfect segue for what I brought to say. And that is that I'm going to be gone for a while. I'm going to have a new hip. I'm going to do what Ellie did, the same thing. And it will be soon, in a few weeks, probably the second week of July. I'll know very soon. I'm trying to put it in time so that I don't miss too many things. I don't want to miss our sesshin in August. So my plan is to have it early enough in July that I can make it to sesshin in August. We'll see how that works out, but I think it will. But in the meantime, I don't quite know how we'll do our study of the Diamond Sutra.
Make Donald
Lynn
do it.
Well, that's one of the options. I had a meeting with Vanya and some of my brothers and sisters of a month or so ago on Skype, and that worked fine. And I thought, well, if we could set up Skype somehow, then we could just carry on, me at my house and you here. In fact, I'm doing Doksan with Jane McDonald on Skype every week. We're studying the Lotus Sutra together. So it's perfectly possible, and it's very simple to do. There are good teachers who would be glad to come, I'm sure. Misha, I know, would come, and Cornelia, and Michael, and Kokyo might come. He just invited me to come to Santa Cruz so we could invite Kokyo to come. So that might be a very interesting opportunity for you all just to be exposed to other teachers and enjoy a new voice, which is actually, I think, probably the most sensible way of doing it. But I'm leaving it up to you to think about it. We don't have to decide right now. And we can talk about it some more next week. Ron?
How many more sections or chapters?
I think it's 35, is it? We're about halfway through. Of course, we could race through the rest of it, but... Yeah. Well... Well, that's the other thing, and that is a very good practice, actually. We talk about that at BRATS, the teachers meeting, and there's several teachers there who do it on purpose, just go away and let the Sangha take care of themselves and set it up so that they learn how to create their own support. So in a way, that would be the best, depending on how you all feel about that.
Would you be grading us?
Well, of course.
Maybe each week one of us could just, you know, as we go through it, like 14 through.
Yes. Yes.
would be another, you know, 10 or so that I could
be. Be excellent. They do that on Wednesday. The Wednesday evening group, they often take a material and then one person volunteers to do chapter so-and-so and leads the discussion. So, and that's really good for everybody to have a chance to do that. It's a little intimidating, a little scary, but scary is good. So think about it, and I'll think about it some more, and I'll have the date set, I hope, next week, so I'll know better what the whole story is. And I would love it if you all would come and visit me. I know I'm pretty far away, but it would be a treat if you would come and pay a call every now and then. Where am I?
Where will you be staying at home?
I'll be at home.
Still doing that women's retreat?
Yes, yes. It's going to happen right after the women's retreat. Crowning it in.
Yeah.
I wouldn't miss that. I will miss the boulder, says Shane. And I'm really sorry about that. I feel so bad. But I have to miss something, so... So life goes on in strange ways sometimes, and surprising ways. You just have no idea sometimes how it's going to turn out. But already I feel a whole lot better, so it's worth it. You know, it's terribly inconvenient, but it's one of those modern miracles that they talk about that actually improves your life and gives you a whole new way to continue. As Ellie knows very well. Yeah. Yeah. Nobody's even looked at the other one. They haven't even looked at the other one. But it doesn't hurt. It was the pain that led them finally to take an x-ray. And they said, oh, for heaven's sake, you don't have a hip left. Anything else?
Your reflections on Joko Beck Roshi?
Oh, good point, good point. Yes, we lost Joko Beck last week, just a short time ago. She was a pioneer, a real pioneer, one of the first women. She was a renegade, actually, because she trained with Maizumi Roshi and was one of the leading students and one of Maizumi's favorite students and was doing extremely well. But it was the 60s and 70s, and that sangha especially was in all states of so-called freedom, where there was just infinite amount of sexual stuff going on between all the students and the teachers, and drinking. And the teacher himself participated in all of it. And she just was totally disgusted with it and left. She said she wouldn't have any part of that and went off on her own, moved to San Diego and created her own little, very, very simple suburban house, suburban backyard with a little zendo in the back of the house, and became world famous for her teaching, because her teaching was utterly practical, very, very down to earth. There are a number of her books out, and she spoke clearly. She was If she was mad, she was mad. She gave her students a lot of trouble sometimes and whipped them into shape, and they loved her. She was way old. She was in her late 80s, I think, when she died, and was here to the end. So everyone had a chance to say goodbye. It was a very nice parting. The rumor went out that she said her last words were, "This too is wonder." But this too is wonder. But one of her students said that. She said that one time, and then that got exploded into a, you know,
a tweet.
A touching, yeah. A touching little story about her last words. But they could have been her last words, so it is a wonder. So she left five or six students, one of whom is Diane Rossetti, who lives over in Oakland and whom I see every couple of months or so. She's a very fine teacher, wonderful teacher, also very practical, very down to earth. They don't wear robes all the time. They don't do a lot of fussy stuff. They have their own ritual. They chant the Heart Sutra, but they have other things that they do. There's a little poem that they chant at the altar. I tried to learn it. I taught over there when she was in Italy this spring. I did a couple of Saturdays over there, but I never could learn how to do the whole altar thing. But it's lovely. And so nice that somebody had the courage to break the mold and create something that had meaning for her and whoever came to join her. That was her biggest gift, I think, was her independence, even though it was only a superficial independence, because she was completely a Dharma teacher, just not a very fancy one. Yes, she'll be missed. Thank you, Jeffrey. I meant to do that. So, time to go.